pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. Our guest today is the vibrant and ambitious professional, Mohammed Basi. He is determined to make a mark in the software industry, overcoming challenges of vision. He aims to grow a fulfilling career in the field of IT, utilizing the opportunities in the sector. His unquenchable passion is to help his fellow beings in the differently abled community by sharing his experience and knowledge to help them enter mainstream into society, and this is laudable. He has represented the group of visually challenged students in 2008 to meet Dr. APJ Abdul Kalam and was chosen from the group to ask him a question. An astute 5 out of 5 rated IT professional in talent acquisition with an outstanding 12 years of experience in an MNC and a year plus experience in teaching computers and soft skills in an NGO, Wasim is all set to make a difference. Awarded the Star Employee of the Year and the Wall of Support for the Year, he has bagged 5 promotions as a recognition for exhibiting superior performances. An ardent musician, he plays several instruments like the veena, tabla, guitar, and holds a distinction and has even won the second rank in the state-level veena competition. He has given several performances on radio, TV, in India and abroad. Wasim has penned and sung several ghazals and poems and has even composed them. Traveled to the USA on education and cultural exchange programs, Wasim has also performed in a band called Sonada for 2 months in 2004. Listen in as Wasim shares his amazing journey, the challenges he faced as a kid, and how he overcame that. He shares the secret sauce to the infectious positive attitude that he so easily carries. Hi, Wasim. Such a pleasure to meet you, see you after such a long time. And welcome to You and I with Rashmi Shetty.
Thank you. My pleasure being in this conversation, because I've seen you interviewed eminent guests, so I'm happy to be here.
Thank you, Wasim. When we are talking about Wasim, the Wasim we see today is somebody who's inspirational and people derive a lot of motivation from. But what was little Wasim like? So if you can take us through your childhood and tell us where you were brought up, how exactly did your journey begin? It'll be amazing.
I'm a very tough kid. My parents would have had a tough time putting me in one place and pinning me down to something. Yeah, I mean, that's how a child should be. So I was very naughty, not at one place. But then, you know, as I was reaching four and a half years, my eyesight slowly began to come down. So I was losing eyesight for about initial 15-20% of my disability. I myself didn't realize it was so gradual. So I really didn't figure out I'm turning blind. And what happened was, I was also beginning to go to school. And then people at school were saying, you know, why are you sitting in the first bench? Because I wanted to see the board. I was struggling to see the board. They were saying, this is my place. You go to the back bench and all that. Then I stand very next to the teacher's table and then make my notes to see the board and all that. And finally, five and a half years, it became so difficult that I had to move out of school, and then people were saying, you probably should go to blind school. So my parents were, they didn't know Kannada, and then they didn't know how to, whom to approach, and there was no awareness and all of that. So we struggled a little bit, and my parents finally, they were so determined that I need to go to school. So they managed to find out school, and then I was taken to the blind school. There, the story was again a little bit different. They said, no, this person can see quite a lot. You know, he doesn't belong here. This is blind. So I was not legally blind or blind then. I was still struggling to find my society or a community. So then after some time, that went on. And then finally, blind school accepted me that I am blind, and I was given the admission. And then we started the education. So it was a boarding school. My brother is also blind. He is the first child in the family. I am the third child. So when I was born, my parents were so happy that, our second male child is not blind, because my brother is born blind. I was not. But that joy didn't last long. As I said, by the time I reached 4.5 years, and they realized that, their second child is also blind now. So it was very hard for my parents, yet they have given me the best. And I began my education from there on.
Okay, what was this condition, Vaseem, where you're born normal, but then was it something like the retinitis pigmentosa?
Yes, it's called microphthalmos, right? It's a condition where the eyes, retina, eyeball, all this will shrink, right? It will not grow like it should grow, after a baby is born. So my eyes sort of shrunk, eyeballs got smaller and smaller, and then optic nerve also was, they say, dried up.
Okay.
So
it's like an autoimmune, is it? There's no medicine for it.
Yes. It was difficult. There was no medical treatment available for that. So we just have to let it go as is. So
in the midst of all of this, as a small kid, what is it that was going through your head? I'm sure you also were equally confused. How were you in school? How did your school journey progress?
Okay. It was very difficult, no doubt about it. But, if these kind of things happening at the childhood, a child is a ruthless and careless, it doesn't matter. You fall down, you get up and you move. And you exactly do what people tell you not to do, right? That is typical nature of a child. That really helped. If you ask me, if I turn blind at the age of 30, 35 or 25, after the adulthood, it's a little difficult, because your maturity kicks in and you think a lot, and then you don't know what to do. But with as a child, you really don't bother about those things. It was a little bit scary. I was holding myself for a few days and few months, and obviously then I didn't hold it back, and then I was pretty much on my own. And even the school was such that it was a boarding school. You do your own things. You wash your own clothes. You mend your own. You stitch your own clothes. Stuff like that. It's pretty. School was like that. We'll get you do everything on your own. So I think that way, I'm happy that I lost my eyesight at the age of 4 or 5 years. And I didn't really have to worry about the consequences of what if I fall down, what if don't listen to somebody and all of that.
So how were you in school as a student? Were you a brilliant topper in school, above average, average? What was school journey like?
Okay, so on the paper, I'm very average student.
Okay.
Mind you, I'm saying on the paper.
Paper, yeah.
But I was somebody who is going beyond your textbook, who is trying to know bit more what people tell you, curiosity. I spent a lot of time in library. I was a little bit reserved. I was more of reading, writing, very disciplined, reserved. But it is always beyond the curriculum I used to understand things. So that sort of gave my teacher a little bit of insecurity, I believe. They said, this guy knows a little bit too much. And always try to answer questions and doesn't give opportunity for others and all that. So, but that also proved in when I graduated from my 10th SSLC, there were about 13 of us, and I was the one who finished it in first attempt. All the other 12 had to go for a second. And mind you, my marks was just 58%.
And then post-10th, by then, you had decided which stream of education you're going to choose in 11th and 12th, and were you kind of clear what you're going to do?
Okay, so, I'll give you a little bit background, because after 10th, I entered the mainstream, the so-called the regular college or the normal college. So the school was such that, you know, as I said, it prepared us to face the world in the school itself. For example, our daily life was like this. Get up at 4, feed cows, milk them, wash them, and you get ready for breakfast, and you finish, you do your regular schooling, you know, you have your
class.
Typical history, science, social, whatever, right? You know,
yeah.
Those languages, that sort of a schooling. Or apart from that, you had something called as DLS, daily living skills. I mentioned some time ago that, you know, we prepare our own bed, wash our own clothes, we bathe ourselves, and stuff like that. You know, it prepared us to be on your own. Be
and where was this residential school, Vaseem? Were you in Karnataka or outside Karnataka?
Yes. I'm a Bangalorean. So this school is in JP Nagar. It's called Ramana Maharshi Academy for Blind.
Okay. Oh, Ramana Maharshi.
Ramana Maharshi Academy for Blind.
Okay.
Sorry. So this is, it's a very, very good school.
Yes.
Also in the sense that all the other schools in Karnataka were like, teaching other subjects, political science, because science and maths considered to be not for blind. But our school stood its ground and said, no, we will teach these science and mathematics also in the school, high school.
Okay.
I think it was really, really great. So coming back to that, so there were a few things we did. For example, computers, additional curricular activities, sports, even for that making cargo boxes, the vocational training that we got. All these things put us in such a place that I can go out in the world and be on my own. When I took admission in a college, which is a government college, it's a PU boys college in Malleshwaram. So there, you know, you have to sit with everybody, people, so-called normal people, and then same sort of notes I will have to refer, same sort of lectures, same means of studying, and stuff like that. So it was a little different, but I think that 11th and 12th also prepared me to much bigger higher education stuff. So it was a lot of braille books and record cassettes that I used for studying. But I know that was not a right way of studying, because braille book is so hefty and heavy. You cannot carry them always to college. And cassettes, I am not used to it, because I listen to somebody's reading the book, I doze off. So I had to come up with my own means of studying. So I managed with decent marks in PU. And then I went into...
And what did you devise, Vaseem? Because you said when you listen to record cassettes, you fall asleep. Braille books were too heavy. So what was your management system that you had devised to make sure that you understand what you're studying?
Well, for me, I want somebody who can interact. Like I said, you know, somebody reads a book. I had always this itching to ask questions, to get those questions answered. Otherwise, I am still with the question and book is already read and finished. So it used to happen that way. So I needed somebody who is sitting in front of me reading that book. So it's called the reading services. I took a lot of help from people who sit and read down me and all that. It was great. I don't think people do that anymore because of this advent of computers and all that. I think that was great. And also I was also inclined towards technology. So I began computers around the same time. I went for a computer course in my summer holidays and picked up some internet browsing skills and all of that, and managed to finish PU. And by when I finished PU, I was seriously thinking, what do I do next? Because until then, it was just going with the flow.
When what subjects did you pick in your PU?
Our PU was typical history, economics, and
Okay.
political science and sociology.
Okay. Post that, post PU, how did you decide where you're going, what you're going to do?
Right. So what happened when I really gave a thought, I realized I am poor at many things, despite, you know, I'm in the mainstream and I'm talking to people, enough confidence, but still not good enough to get into a college. So then I realized I need to do something on my English, because what I studied was English medium, but all I learned was Kannada. All right. English was not at all there. So then I had to pick up my communication skills. And I also know that if I have to strike a conversation with somebody, I need to understand what's happening around the current affairs and stuff like that. So I took journalism, and to understand my own rights, what is right, wrong, you know, stuff like that. So I took political science. So when I took these, after consulting a lot of people, this was a very well thought out decision, I would say, that I wanted to do journalism, English, and political science. I mean, from there on, it was a lot of learning, a lot of efforts, spend a day and night, putting for your studies. It was like this. My college was in Jayanagar. I used to live in Kearpuram, and it was, I start at 7 from home, go back home at 11. Between all that is just studies, studies, studies. So I put in a lot of efforts then. And by God's grace, I'm a graduate. I am the only graduate at home. I mean, my parents' wish was at least one person, you know, comes out of college with a degree. So I think that was the dream come true for my parents. And also, I am happy that, you know, I could achieve that.
You know, Wasim, when I saw you first, I saw you on stage. When did music enter your life?
Music was very much there in my childhood itself, because the school I went there, it's very, very rich in the culture, music, etc. So we were really given not just the so-called normal education, we were also given that sort of a culture and music. So where we began our, music at the very, very early age.
Yeah.
So music teacher was sitting, she was also new. And I was just standing by the window outside, and then she is playing Veena, and then I heard that sound, sort of, we say nada. I mean, if I say nada, that is more appropriate, because if I say sound, probably not the right word. So the nada that I heard from Veena, I think that was very beckoning, inviting, or it was also very soothing. I mean, I just stand by there and then listen, and then music teacher saw me 2-3 days, and she invited me in, and then we had a conversation and all that. And then slowly other things creeped in, such as, you know, culture-wise, you know, you're a Muslim, this is an instrument held by Goddess Saraswati and all that. I mean, you've got to leave that behind. Like I said, when you are in the right environment, you know, you think right. So I was very, very happy that I was brought up in that culture. And then those kind of things didn't have a space, so I had to let that go. And then I began Veena there. And I learned Veena with that teacher for about 16, 17 years. So I took formal exams. You know, they have junior, senior, and Vidwat and all that. So I began all of that right from the school age, and gave a lot of programs. I would not say concerts then. At the school itself, I was giving programs at All India Radio.
Okay.
I was giving programs for TV. So it really gave us very good confidence. So my music is right from my childhood.
Because the first time when I saw you on stage playing the Veena, I really, really loved the way you played it. Because Veena is one of my favorite instruments. And when later you told me your name is Wasim, I was even more surprised and inspired. I was always curious to know where music came into your life, because I'm sure it gave you a lot of stages to perform and also come before people to show your progress in music. So
That's
did
right.
it continue in college as well? Like, did you keep the classes on when you were studying in college? Because your day seemed so long in college, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. Did music find a place, or you had set music aside now?
No, no. There was no question of setting music aside, when I was finishing my school, when I got go very good marks, you know, about 94 out of 100, I was probably state second rank in terms of score. So
Oh.
my Veena teacher gifted Veena as a token of appreciation.
Oh, wow.
She also said, look, this is actually a gift, but I do not want to give it away just like that. Just to give you a feeling that you have earned it, right? You need to pay me 1,000 rupees. So I made that, and then she taught me that, you know, yeah, nothing comes as a free lunch. So my teacher, my music teacher, her name is Indira Ramakrishna. She
Okay.
taught me that whatever you get, you have to earn it. So therefore, you know, she, that is her way of teaching, you know, you just give 1,000 rupees and this gift is yours. So, well, the actual intent is that, you know, she wanted to appreciate me for the effort that I put in securing that marks and for the passion that I had for Veena. So Veena is always with me.
Okay. And post your graduation, how did life decide what you're going to take up? Were you clear by the time you finished your graduation that you're moving into the HR space?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sort of yes and no, because by the time I graduated from my college, I was thinking three, four things. One, something on the technology. I was good at writing because I was a journalism graduate. So can I do something like technical writing, where people write a lot of manuals and user stories on technology, just like people write reviews on the movies, right? I wanted to write things about technology. So this is what I was thinking. But then I understand that it had some limitations in terms of courses and certifications and all of that. But then I changed it a little bit. I thought I would get into talent acquisition within the HR function. So where I get to see how the technology is moving on the market, at the same time, interview people who are technical people, who are software engineers and architects, right? And so, I mean, I am anyways a people person, like to talk, and the technology came in. So I thought it would be not a bad combination, and I thought I would go in here.
So looking back, Vaseem, at this point, on your childhood, on your PU, and then your college, and you're moving into HR and choosing talent acquisition, what are some of those pivoting points for you that told you that, Vaseem, this is what you have to do, this is how you need to go? What were those conversations you had with the self that helped you understand who you can become?
The thing that I first told myself is that, look, you are confident, but then you just have to prove it to the people, right? It is always a conversation that will make a difference. That is why interviews have been valued so much. So I know that I need to prepare for the interview, prepare to present myself, and also present technology skills. Because in the interview, you can talk, but then when it comes to presentations, you will have to have your laptop or computer skills and go out there and present. So similar thing happened. I was called in for an interview, the place I'm working in. So they said, look, this is the first time we are hiring anybody who's visually impaired. We don't know a lot of things, but you'll have to tell us what job you would want, what is that you would want to work as. And basis that, you know, we will go back and work out something. I knew that, you know, I am good at operating computers, finding the information that I would need, writing emails, a little bit of reports on Excel and all that. So this is what I've got. You tell me what job you have. Then I asked them back. Okay, then they worked out something and then say, okay, we will try this guy for about 6 months and then see what is working for him and what is working for us. And then we'll take a collective decision or mutual decision that is working out for both of us. I think that was very, very right approach in getting somebody on board. Otherwise, what happens is you get somebody on board and there's a disappointment, and that will become a stigma or a taboo for the next person to come in. I think that was very, very mature way of handling. So then I was interviewed for about 4 or 5 rounds. All the people in the organization, from the senior manager to the VP, everybody met me, and I was given this opportunity. And after 1 year, and they gave me a star employee of the year award.
I'm not at all surprised, because what I have noticed the way you're telling your story is the amazing positive attitude that you possess. Now, where did this attitude stem from, Vaseem? Because as you're telling your story, what helped you through and through was this positivity that you carry within. How are you so positive?
Yeah, my music teacher again. She's been with me since my childhood. I have not discussed too much in detail with my parents because they don't really understand. But my music teacher, she saw that every small thing she identifies, and she coached me. For example, I gave you an example of Veena. She wanted to give me as a gift. She taught me a lesson there. So she, despite me being Muslim, she is a Brahmin. She anybody would have had a little bit of hesitation, but then she was such a person that she didn't have a hesitation. She always encouraged me to be positive, and she pushed me to my beyond my capabilities. So she helped me discover myself. She helped me go beyond my own caliber and then give it a shot. And what comes after that is not in your control. You give your best shot, and then whatever comes after that, you need to build on that. I think that is the lesson she gave. And ever since, I always worry about taking the first step. The second step naturally opens up.
Yeah. And today people are very skeptical. They have this fear of failure. So not many people take a risk and get out of their comfort zone. To people like that and young children who are now moving into college, who want to take a risk but are not sure, so they go the set path and the road taken already. Very few step into the road not taken. So to such people who are hesitant, what would you want to tell them? Because you've always gone beyond yourself, asked everywhere. Like you said, your curiosity is your biggest strength. And that has helped you see ways of learning your way rather than the way the world dictated. So, what would you like to tell such people who hesitate because of the fear of?
Yeah, for those people, I would say if you hesitate the first step, you really have to sit. The thought that you can get up, thought that you can take a step in itself is a great step. So I think have that thought always. You will naturally take step. Number one. Number two, worry not too much about what happens always after you take the first step. If it goes wrong, you will always have the ability to bounce back. Do your course correction. That's fine. But if you don't take a step and then don't initiate, I think then you will have a big regret that you have not made an attempt to try that.
So today, when we talk about your profession, where are you in HR? Still in talent acquisition, or you've gone way beyond?
Yes, I joined here as a fresher. Today I am an assistant manager. I have three reportees who are reporting to me. I get them on par with other team, get them to the pace that we expect them to be at work. I help them understand the process, business, talent acquisition skills, and especially the interviews. How do you conduct an interview? How do you go with your negotiations? Those are the key skills that they will have to acquire at a talent acquisition role. Yeah, so company has recognized my talent, and have they have recognized me with several awards. I said star employee of the year, the Wall of Support award, few promotions, recognition by various means. So it's been 12 years for me in this organization, and the journey is still on, and there is a lot of fire in the belly still. So I want to also thank the leadership team here. I also want to thank my manager who brought me up, literally brought me up from nowhere, and today I'm an assistant manager.
Wow. So you sure are an inspiration for a lot of people around you. Do you recall any story where somebody came back to you with the feedback on how your presence, what you told them, changed their way of thinking or how you inspired them?
Yeah, a lot of people give me feedback. I think taking feedback is indeed a very, very important thing. Otherwise, you will not learn everything yourself. You know, somebody will view it from outside and then let you know. And that's very, very key. And at the organization, many people give me feedback. My team, I could not have asked for a better team. I've got such a supporting team. Anywhere I have a little bit of issues, they are around. Secondly, be it profession or outside, you know, you will also have to learn from your own activities or experience, right? Otherwise, you will only take the first step. You will never take the second step. So rather than you take only a first step every time, you know, you learn and take the next step, building on the first step, I think. And also, I believe whatever you get from the society has to be given back to the society. So which means that I learned from my manager all the skills, tricks of the trade at a talent acquisition. At an assistant manager, I need to give that back to my team. I think these are things that I really, really value, and these are my principles too.
Okay. And now when you look back, you have tread a journey, a road, which has been quite a road full of milestones that you can be proud of. Awards, recognition, amazing people, mentors who have all groomed you to be who you are today, Vaseem. But is there any one moment in this journey of yours till now, which you look back at with a lot of fondness and get your inspiration and attitude from?
Yes, they say for every success of a man, there is a woman behind it. So for not one woman, there are multiple of them. My mother is the biggest source of inspiration. It was her determination that I needed to be a graduate. Which she did sacrifice a lot. You know, I do not want to get into too much of details. And she used to come from Kerpram, and then by bus, she used to get tired and she used to sleep on the bus stop. And yet, you know, she would reach my school and then, you know, take me home weekly once and stuff like that. And my dad is an auto driver. He made me sit next to him, and show me the places around. If you take a right, it will go to Kerpram. If you take a left, it will go to Kepal. So today, I'm on my own. I can travel independently all across the country and in the US. I've been to US in 2004, right? So my parents have given me great source of inspiration. Second, life lessons from my music teacher, which I've already discussed. And you would also need your family to stand by in your tough times. I think one person from your family is next to you. You can face the world. I think when I look at these people make me feel proud that I've got such a people around me, and I thank God for keeping me in the middle of such people. So that is something I always thank God.
Yeah, that's so true. And since you're in this reflective space, my next question is about the pandemic. Everyone went into our own reflective cocoons and paused. It was a forceful pause, not that we wanted to take it, but it gave us a lot of understanding of what exactly life is and what needs to be given importance. So how was it with you, Vaseem? How did the pandemic treat you? What were your reflections from the pandemic?
All right, I would like to answer this question in two parts, Rashmi. One, at a personal level.
Yeah.
Right? And the one at a person with disability level in general. Because these two will have a greater insights what a person with disability or what a person like Vaseem has gone through. I consider myself a little lucky at a personal level because I have a job that I can do work from home. Right? And I also was in a position that, you know, I can do some online transactions to run my family. Now, if you look at the person with disability in general, it is very difficult because online teaching is not meant for persons with disability. Person who has to study sitting at home, it's very difficult, right? I gave you an example of my own. You know, I always wanted somebody who's before me reading this out and having a conversation, not just reading it out. That is very, very key for persons with disability. Second, for those who are at home, it is not a good sign that person is at home. We build a lot of confidence by moving around, changing bus, talking to people, asking for help, blah, blah, blah. All these were not possible in the COVID. For example, I have a brother who's blind. He did not step out of home for about 20, 25 years because he was not same as I am in terms of understanding things. So he needed a special attention. So because I was in my school, boarding school, he did not get that opportunity. But I, when I finished my education, I ensured that he goes out on his own to the place wherever he wants to go. Now, if he is sitting at home just because COVID or whatever reason that he is not able to move, it's very, very difficult for him to make a mark in this society or even to be a competitive in the market. Third, a lot of things, technology is slowly opening up, but still, you know, you cannot go to ATM, right? You cannot go to hospital.
True.
You cannot approach somebody for some help. There's some needs to be done at home. You know, when you cannot do this kind of things, it's very difficult for persons with disabilities. So I'm thankful to God that, you know, we've overcome that. And there are a few apps such as Seeing AI and stuff like that where you can make a call and then still seek a help. But it's always a limitation for persons with disability. On that sense, I am very, very lucky. I had people around and I was able to do things on my own, banking, shopping, whatever that I wanted to. Otherwise, it was very, very difficult for persons with disability.
Very, very true. And Wasim, on that note, three life lessons that you'd like to leave us with?
Three life lessons is stay positive. Your determination will tell actually who you are when you accomplish things. It is not what step you take. It is actually what you decide on your action. That's one thing. Second thing, if you think you've achieved one, don't get into rest mode. You know, there's nothing called, you know, it's a time for relax. There's a saying, miles to go before I sleep. There's always something that you can do more. It's never like you've done and then over. I think always have that burning desire to go beyond and do beyond. And third, of course, is relationship. I give a great deal of importance for the relationship. Also, because that is also, in a way, stress buster. You know, people, somebody would be around to, you can put your head down on their shoulders and then, you know, probably cry on and then lean on and then discuss. Right? I think you need somebody to talk to. You need somebody to share. I think give great importance to your relationship. These are the three lessons that I would like to pass it on to people.
Thank you so very much, Wasim. I'm sure you're an inspiration with whoever you have met. God bless you and may you continue to inspire. Honored to have had you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. And all I can tell you is may your tribe increase and may this positive attitude that you carry continue to be spreading the joy the world needs so much today. Thank you so much for your time, Basi.
Thank you for having me here.
Pleasure. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come, let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.